Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 16, titled Krishna Chastises the Serpent Kaliya. Today we're reading texts 6, 7, and 8. Chanda Vega Vishavirayam Avekshatena. Maybe 6 and 7 I'll just read and then we'll chant 8. Does that sound alright? Tushtam nidham cha kalasam yama navatara Krishna kadambam Adir yuya tato titungam aspotya gadha rashano yapatat vishode. Translation: Lord Krishna saw how the Kaliya serpent had polluted the Yamuna River with his terribly powerful poison. Since Krishna had descended from the spiritual world specifically to subdue envious demons, the Lord immediately climbed to the top of a very high kadamba tree and prepared himself for battle. He tightened his belt, slapped his arms, and then jumped into the poisonous water. Purport: According to the Acharyas, Lord Krishna also tied back the locks of his hair as he prepared to do battle with Kaliya. Text 7. I thought I'd had like a good meter to chant these verses with. Thank you so much. Could you do that again? Oh, super. Sarpa rida purusha sara nipata vega sankshyo bito raga visho chavisha tambu rashi paryak pluto visha vishaya bibhisha normir dhavandanu shatamananta balasya kimtat. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead landed in the serpent's lake, the snakes there became extremely agitated and began breathing heavily, further polluting it with volumes of poison. The force of the Lord's entrance into the lake caused it to overflow on all sides, and poisonous, fearsome waves flooded the surrounding lands up to a distance of 100 bow lengths. This is not at all amazing, however, for the Supreme Lord possesses infinite strength. And text 8, maybe this one we'll chant together. Tasya hrade viharato bhujadanda gurna. Tasya hride viharato bhujadanda gurna.
Tasya hride viharato bhujadanda gurna.
Vargosham Angavaravarana Vikramasya. Vargosham Angavaravarana Vikramasya. Ashrutya tat svasadhana bhibhav nirikshya. Ashrutya tat svasadhana bhibhavam nirikshya. Chakshu shrava sama sarat tad amris yamana. Chakshu shrava samara. Excuse me. Chakshu shrava samasarat tad amris yamana. Tasya. Of him. Prade. In his lake. Viharata. Who was playing? Bhujadanda. By his mighty arms. Gurna. Swirled about. Va. Of the water. Gosham. The resounding. Anga, my dear king. Varavarana, like a great elephant. Vikramasya, whose prowess. Ashrutya, hearing. Tat, that. Swasadana, of his own residence. Abhibhavam, the trespassing. Nirikshya, taking note of. Chakshu Shravaha, Kaliya. Samasarat, came forward. Tat, that. Amrishyamana, being unable to tolerate. Translation. Krishna began sporting in Kaliya's lake like a lordly elephant, swirling his mighty arms and making the water resound in various ways. When Kaliya heard these sounds, he understood that someone was trespassing in his lake. The serpent could not tolerate this and immediately came forward. Purport. According to the Acharyas, Lord Krishna was producing wonderful musical sounds within the water simply by splashing his hands and arms.
Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshulam Militam Yenam Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
I'm very humbled to try to speak today. I'm begging for the blessings from all of my worshipable seniors. I have no power, I have no devotion, just begging for your mercy. So, Kaliya poisoned the waters of a pond connected to the Yamuna. And when the cowherd boys and the cows went there, they drank from that nectarian water of the Yamuna, but it had been poisoned, and they died. They all died. And Krishna, by his mystic potency, brought them back to life. And he also understood that the cause of that poison was the Kaliya serpent that was deep in the waters of the Yamuna. And so now in these verses that we read today, Krishna is going to enter into the water and challenge the Kaliya serpent. And I just thought we should not rush through these verses too fast. We should get a picture of what has been said, because it's very wonderful. Krishna saw how the Kaliya serpent had polluted the Yamuna River with his terribly powerful poison. Since Krishna had descended from the spiritual world specifically to subdue envious demons, Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. That was his purpose, one of his purposes to come. The Lord immediately climbed to the top of a very high kadamba tree and prepared himself for battle. He tightened his belt, slapped his arms, and then jumped into the poisonous water. And in the purport, it says, the acharyas say, Krishna, he also tied back his hair as he prepared to do battle. So, you know, you can imagine, like, for a fight, you got to tighten the belt, tie the hair back. There's a, in the Nectar of Devotion, describing the qualities of Krishna, additional qualities of Krishna. It says Krishna is a meticulous dresser. And so he's always looking very sharp. I'll just find that section. A person, Prabhupada writes, a person who is very fond of dressing himself is called Lalita, or a meticulous dresser. This characteristic was found in Krishna in two ways. Sometimes he used to decorate Srimati Radharani with various marks, and sometimes when he was preparing to kill demons like Aristasura, he would take care to arrange his belt very nicely. So maybe it was both in order to be ready to fight and also for style, that he's looking nice. Another characteristic is there, that Krishna is very artistic. That's one of the 64 qualities. Sorry. Prabhupada writes, one who can talk and dress himself very artistically is called Vidagdha. This exemplary characteristic was visible in the personality of Sri Krishna. It is spoken of by Radharani as follows: "My dear friend, just see how Krishna has nicely composed songs, and how he dances and speaks funny words and plays on his flute, wearing such nice garlands. He has dressed himself in such an enchanting way, as though he had defeated all kinds of players at the chessboard. He lives wonderfully at the topmost height of artistic craftsmanship." Very wonderful. Then in text 7, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead landed in the Serpent's Lake, the snakes there became extremely agitated and began breathing heavily, further polluting it with volumes of poison. The force of the Lord's entrance into the lake caused it to overflow on all sides, and poisonous, fearsome waves flooded the surrounding lands up to a distance of 100 bow lengths. How long is a bow length?
About a yard.
Yeah, I also asked this question. And I got two answers. There's short bows and there's long bows. It's anything from about a meter to a meter and a half. So 100 bow lengths, something like 100 to 150 meters. You know, like people when they jump in water, there's like a called a cannonball, and the water splashes so far. Krishna's the water from the Yamuna, I don't even know if the Yamuna is 100 meters wide in many places. The water splashed over 100 meters. And the verse said what? That it's not very astonishing. This is not at all amazing, however, for the Supreme Lord possesses infinite strength. And then text 8. Krishna began sporting in Kaliya's lake like a lordly elephant, swirling his mighty arms and making the water resound in various ways. When Kaliya heard these sounds, he understood that someone was trespassing in his lake. The serpent could not tolerate this and immediately came forward. And then the purport says, Lord Krishna was producing wonderful musical sounds within the water simply by splashing his hands and arms. So even that was artistic. Like sometimes if we hear someone play the mridanga very beautifully and artfully, it's like, wow, something wonderful, something astonishing. So Krishna was slapping the water in such a way that created like astonishing sounds. And there's qualities of Krishna that are explained like that. In the quality Krishna's attractive flute, Prabhupada writes, in the 10th canto, 35th chapter, verse 15 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the gopis tell Mother Yashoda, when your son plays on his flute, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Indra, although they are supposed to be the greatest learned scholars and personalities, all become bewildered. Although they are all very great personalities, by hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, they humbly bow down and become grave from studying the sound vibrated. So you can imagine Shiva, Brahma, Indra, they will be great scholars of music also and understand so many subtleties. But when they hear Krishna's flute, they all become bewildered. Even there's something it says Shiva can fall off his bull. And so what was the artistry of Krishna slapping the water? How beautiful was the sound vibration? Later in the Krishna Lila, Krishna and Balaram will study at the Gurukul of Sandipani Muni, and they're taught the 64 arts. And there's a long list of arts. I think Prabhupada writes something like, these are all the arts required in human society. And several of them are music. Several of them are like singing and composing. and playing rhythmic instruments. And Krishna and Balaram, of course, they're the source of all artistry, but they were so talented that it says that in the morning they would begin learning one of the arts, and by the evening they will have mastered that art. So I also thought to speak a bit about Bhaktivinoda Thakur has talked about the demons of Krishna Leela and how they can be understood to represent obstacles or anarthas in our path of devotional service. I remember as a new devotee, there was a very nice senior person. He gave me like some warnings. He told me, there's a few reasons people leave Krishna consciousness. I forgot all the things that he said, but I remember he said, some people will leave for Maya. It means some people will decide, no, better I go enjoy sense gratification. And some people may get bewildered by non-devotional philosophies, think that there's some better idea somewhere else. And others may lose their faith in Guru and have some doubt that maybe Srila Prabhupada cannot lead us to the highest goal. And so he told me those things to kind of to give me a warning. You should think about this now with a cool head. You should anticipate that various types of obstacles will come in the course of your devotional path. And you should think about now, you know, how you'll deal with that when those come. If the prospect of materialistic life and sense gratification presents itself, you should think now, is it better to do that than to surrender to Krishna and to do devotional service? What is the consequence of doing, of engaging in a materialistic life? What's the consequence of devotional service? Think about that so that if an obstacle like that will come, then you've already thought about how you plan to deal with that, how you plan to navigate that obstacle. So it was very helpful advice for me. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is doing something similar when he's talking about the demons and how they can represent various anarthas. One thing is that we should remember the 10th canto is a very exalted subject matter. It's not exactly for the beginners. Our beginning books, we know, are Bhagavad Gita and so many introductory books. Those are like, Prabhupada sometimes says Bhagavad Gita is like the undergraduate course. Srimad Bhagavatam is like the master's course. Chaitanya Charitamrita is like the PhD course. So there's like a progression in our syllabus. And even for coming to the 10th canto, that also has to be approached in a proper way. If the kids in grade school are going to sit in the PhD course thinking that, you know, I will get my PhD faster that way, then that's a mistake. So this 10th canto, Prabhupada especially says again and again from what I've seen, one should systematically study the first 9 cantos before coming to the 10th canto. So even for devotees, this is a higher subject matter. And so these anarthas, he explains in Krishna Samhita, one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's many books, you can say it's something like, if a devotee is already fixed in Krishna consciousness, they're established in strong sadhana, their anarthas are not maybe very visible. You know, the gross anarthas are not there. They're very faithful to Guru, surrendered, and they have some determination to make advancement. And that's something like an intermediate devotee. We have like the beginner devotees, the Kanishta Adhikaris, the Madhyam Adhikaris, the Uttam Adhikaris. So especially these anarthas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving some guidance for the obstacles that can be expected for the intermediate devotees who want to advance to the highest stages of Krishna consciousness. Just like that senior devotee had warned me, you know, you should anticipate different obstacles will come in Krishna consciousness. How are you going to deal with those? So, Kaliya, the Kaliya serpent, he represents malice or villainy. Villainy means like a criminal intention. And Kaliya has attacked Krishna and attacked the residents of Vrindavan in a little bit of a different way. Other devotees like Putana, Shakatasura, Trinavarta, Bakasura, Denuka, Aristasura, different demons that we've they may confront directly. But here, Kaliya's hidden. Kaliya's hidden deep in the water and doesn't come to Krishna personally or Balaram personally. He's poisoned the water, the pure water of the Yamuna. The Yamuna, which is the a transcendental, most sacred water. He's poisoned that water and even killed the associates of Krishna, the cowherd boys, the cows. And so, in the same way, we have to be careful that even in the association of devotees, even in Vaishnav society, there may be some poison that has to be carefully dealt with, carefully avoided. You can say, all that glitters is not gold. In Srila Prabhupada's introduction to Bhagavad Gita, he writes in the introduction, someone may ask, why do we need another edition of Bhagavad Gita? There are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita written in English that one can get. And then he gives the answer. He said, recently, a young woman from America, she asked me, please recommend an edition of Bhagavad Gita that I can read. And Srila Prabhupada said, I have to reply, I cannot recommend any of them. I cannot recommend any of them because in all of them, the author is written with some personal motive. Instead of directly delivering the message of Krishna, the author has written, he has used Bhagavad Gita, the pure water, the pure sacred transcendental sound vibration of the Bhagavad Gita. The author has used that to promote his own idea that is independent of the message of Krishna. And so for that reason, they're all mixed with some poison, Prabhupada is warning. Similarly, in Srila Prabhupada's purport to the Hare Krishna mantra, Srila Prabhupada says, especially we should try to hear the Hare Krishna mantra from pure devotees. As much as possible, we should avoid hearing Hare Krishna from non-devotees. He says, milk that has been touched by the lips of a serpent has a poisonous effect. So, in the same way, we may have to carefully discriminate. There may be sincere-seeming people in our society of devotees, but they may introduce some type of poison, some type of deviation, some type of minimization, relativation of the acharya. Those things have to be carefully considered. It's a sensitive thing to say. Maybe I won't say too much more. Today is also the appearance day of Purushottam Das Thakur. Who is that? I wasn't sure until I looked it up. But something in his life is very relevant, exactly on the point. There's a couple of verses mentioning Purushottam Das Thakur in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishnas Kaviraj writes, the 23rd and 24th prominent devotees of Nityananda Prabhu were Sadashiva Kaviraj and his son Purushottam Das, who was the 10th Gopal. Since birth, Purushottam Das Thakur was merged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and he always engaged in childish play with Lord Krishna. Another verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sadashiva Kaviraj was a great personality. Purushottam Das was his son. From birth, Purushottam Das was absorbed in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and he always engaged in childish play with Lord Krishna. His son was named Sri Kanu Thakur, a very respectable gentleman. His body was saturated with the nectar of love for Lord Krishna. And there's a Gaudiya Vaishnav biographer which states, Purushottam once ate snake poison. When Purushottam once ate snake poison while in a trance state, without experiencing any ill effects. This was a source of great astonishment to all who witnessed it. Many of Nityananda Prabhu's associates often displayed such miraculous power. So, here's a great devotee. He ate some snake poison, and he still lived. How is it possible? It's something like Prahlad Maharaj, something like Haridas Thakur. Their lives were threatened in so many ways. Prahlad Maharaj, his father tried to kill him in so many ways. But somehow he was so surrendered to the Lord that the Lord protected him completely. Similarly, Haridas Thakur, beaten in 21 marketplaces. How can anyone survive that? Somehow he was so dear to the Lord, so surrendered to the Lord, that he was able to survive that. Purushottam Das Thakur, how can someone take snake poison and survive? How can the cowherd boys take snake poison and die? What's the answer? The answer is, how surrendered were they to Krishna? How dear were they to Krishna? And so, we have a question, or I have a question. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is warning us about this threat that even in Vaishnav society there may be deviation. And historically there has been deviation. That's our history. We know that there's a time period after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu where Gaudiya Vaishnav society fell into terrible disrepute. I'm not sure how you say it. And it is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who in so many ways reformed Gaudiya Vaishnav society to bring it to a higher standard. So, what's the answer? How is there a way that we can also become immune from poison? And my answer is yes. Yes, I think there is. Every day we're singing Guru Vandana. Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti Sadma. The lotus feet of our spiritual master are the only way by which we can attain pure devotional service. I bow to his lotus feet with great awe and reverence. With great awe and reverence. By his grace, one can cross the ocean of material suffering and obtain the mercy of Krishna. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. So when someone comes with the poison of an idea, you know, Prabhupada was very nice, he was right about many things, but this is a mistake. We don't have to listen to that poison. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. Attachment to his lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He is my Lord, birth after birth. From him, ecstatic prema emanates. By him, ignorance is destroyed. The Vedic scriptures sing of his character. Our spiritual master is the ocean of mercy, the friend of the poor, and the Lord and master of the devotees. O Master, be merciful unto me. Give me the shade of your lotus feet. Your fame is spread all over the three worlds. So what is our hope for transcending, surpassing this great obstacle? It is our exclusive shelter, taking exclusive shelter at the feet of Guru, like Nartam Das Thakur is writing in this song that we sing every day. So I'd like to humbly ask if anyone has any question or comment or some discussion.
If we're always worried about deviations and, oh, this is going to come and that's going to come, maybe we can get a little too mentally perplexed and anticipating when are these bad omens or deviant philosophy going to come, and maybe not be overly optimistic and maybe become too pessimistic.
If a devotee is really sincerely surrendering, progressively, then there's nothing to fear. The cowherd boys, they didn't do anything, actually, in terms of fighting Kaliya or trying to purify the waters of the Yamuna. They drank that water and it killed them. And Krishna saved them because they were so dear to him, because they were so absolutely surrendered to him. He fully protected them. So in the same way, our business is to surrender to Krishna, to surrender to Krishna's representatives, and depend on them for protection. Is that okay?
I certainly surrender by Shesha.
Yeah, me too, me too.
As such a well thought out and satisfying presentation, it was no part of it that didn't fit with another, and it was pleasing to the heart. Thank you. These are just thoughts that go with the mood of your class, because you brought out like a feast with various flavors, and then they all went together. And as you were speaking about how Krishna made music with his arms in the water, I was thinking how the Srimad Bhagavatam also mentions when Garuda flaps his wings, it's the sound of the Vedas.
Wow.
And that the various ragas come from each gopi has an individual raga.
Wow.
And there are millions of them.
Wow.
And those descend into this world. So I was thinking, once I saw a bumper sticker that says, life doesn't make sense without music. And I was thinking also how the spiritual world doesn't always make sense, but the idea that it's void, and that when it's filled up with this mentioned Shriya Kanta, Kanta, Purusha Kanta, Tarabha, etc. You know,
it's song, dance, and so forth. Very
interesting, powerful.
And I liked your solution also to overcoming the obstacles. Thank you so much, Rahul.
Hare Krishna. So you have a nice point of presentation. There can be some hidden poisons. That's the
society.
So how we can identify those hidden poisons? You told that we have to make care of them, but how?
How can we identify poison in Vaishnav society?
Yes.
We should hear very, very thoroughly from our guru, from Srila Prabhupada. And my only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. If we are fixed in hearing from Srila Prabhupada, from his bona fide representatives, then that should equip us with the needed discrimination. We should also be under good guidance. We should have shelter of seniors. Is that okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
anything substantive to say except for just another random comment, which was about in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is telling Buddha about the mystic powers that one develops. Pure devotees develop, by his grace, a plethora of mystic potencies that come naturally to the pure devotee. It's an endeavor for them, and yogis do. But one of them is that the pure devotee is immune to poison.
Right. Wow.
I've seen that before. I just, as I said, this is somewhat random, but maybe you can weave it into.
Wow.
Srila Prabhupada gives the example of Vashini. He's a Bhagavidham. Bhagavidham means that it's like the sun. By the potency of its rays can purify a not so nice place, an impure place, and still remain pure. So to answer that Krishna Buddha's question, you answer already that when we associate with advanced and pure devotees, poison cannot really touch them. And even if poison comes, they purify the poison. Wouldn't the consciousness of those devotees have been if shelter?
Right.
Apapa Vita, the immune.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Interesting use of words malice and villainy. Seems to me that there is some indication of intent when there's malice. Because as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, apichatsu dharacharo, someone may be errant in their practices of devotional service, but if they're not filled with malice, it seems it's a different category. There's some intent to towards villainy, actually.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel we've seen it so many times. You know, I'm always so nervous to give these classes. I prepare maybe to speak for like 3 hours with all the stuff I collect. One of the things I collected was exactly on this point, something from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He answers the question, what is the difference between weakness and cheating? Cheating and weakness are two separate things. Persons devoid of a cheating propensity achieve perfection in life, but a cheater is never successful. Vaishnavism is another name for simplicity. Cheaters are non-devotees. Sincere persons can be weak, but they are not cheaters. Like yesterday you were saying in the class, there's a verse from the 11th canto, even devotees are not entirely able to control their senses, still they shouldn't be morose about that. They should still continue on with determination. So that may be weakness. But cheating is with malice, with villainy, with some intent. Again, continuing the reading, cheaters say something and do something else. Weak people are embarrassed by their defects, whereas cheaters are maddened by their achievements. Anyway, yes. I'm sorry to say, but we've seen it. We've seen it. We've seen people come and try to disturb the faith of the devotees. You know, with some type of clever, you know, word jugglery, minimizing Srila Prabhupada, relativizing Srila Prabhupada. For Krishna consciousness, we need enthusiasm, determination, confidence. Someone who will come and try to break that in us. That's the most violent thing. That's the most horrible poison. And we've seen people do like that, and we should be very careful about that. Is that all right? Thank you so much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.